Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society. Potluck Society. Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome. Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society. It never sounds quite right when you're sitting alone in your basement in front of a mic recording, listening back over and over and over and over and over again to your own voice, knowing how it should sound, knowing how you want it to sound, but it just not sounding quite perfect. I had the opportunity this week to sit down and talk to three different people, the duo that leads Pony Creek Studios and one of my dearest friends and former colleagues, Angela T. Walt. We spent a lot of time talking about how the search for perfection can get in the way of the right take or the right picture, or the right story or the right audio. So this week I decided to leave some of the rough edges on for you. Now, it's still got a lot of attention and a lot of love, but I left some of those subtleties. For example, I decided to leave my breaths in. Have you ever noticed how some radio programs and podcasts, you don't know what's quite different or maybe a little unnatural? It's because they've removed their breaths, because they just don't sound good. You hear that? So I left those in. I decided that I wanted this to be right even more than I wanted it to be perfect. But I want to try that intro one more time again. Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society. I grew up in a very musical family. It was probably the most common creative expression that our household exhibited. My participation in choirs through high school became a cappella groups once I reached college. It had always been a part of my life. But even 10 years after returning to Sioux Falls and South Dakota and the greater region, I still was not familiar with the South Dakota music scene. This somewhat underground, somewhat understated, definitely underappreciated community of creatives may be this region's greatest kept secret. Led by efforts and organizations like Whitewall Sessions, Total Drag Records, and a host of venues, this industry is deeply connected to itself, but somewhat isolated from the broader public. I've had the good fortune of getting to know two extremely active musicians. They're the duo behind Pony Creek Studios. Let's have them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Chad Conrad.
I'm Michael Yeager.
And we're partners here at Pony Creek Studios.
Some interviews are harder than others. I simply asked Chad and Mike where we should start, and we were off to the races.
I remember the Beatles came out with a remaster for the CD of Let It Be, and they have an entire B-side CD that's like 90 minutes of just them talking in the studio. Super boring probably to a lot of people, but I think I listened to that like at least 20, 30 times, and it's just the Beatles talking. About the studio experience, you know, it's like, but to me that was, I need to absorb that.
What was it about that was intriguing to you? What were you listening for?
Well, I've always been interested in the audio side of things, the behind the scenes, kind of like what we were talking about, the behind the scenes elements of, you know, what happens after the tape stops rolling, but in an essence, it keeps rolling.
One thing I've found is the tape is always rolling. It's the best way to get these little throwaway sound bites, these interesting stories. This was actually the pre-introduction part of the interview, and I think it may be the most magical piece of the entire 90-minute conversation.
But what happens when the artists finish the song in the studio? What are they talking about afterwards? Are they like, you know, of course they're not like, oh, that was, you know, the perfect take, you know, and on to the next tune, you know.
Is that your British accent? Is that what that is?
Yes, it is.
I can only do the Southern. But there's that behind the scenes element of the studio has always been intriguing to me, even when I was super young, is because the idea that, you know, these artists you know, you only get to hear one take. You know, it was always fun to get those B-sides of like take 26 of this song, you know, or take 30, you know, and to hear that it sounds entirely different than the original version or the version that you are normal to, but that version may be take 50, take, you know, whatever. And so like with that Let It Be re-release, I think it's called Fly on the Wall, actually, I think is what the CD is called. It was really fun to hear them, you know, talk about what they thought of that take, or if they were just getting so tired and it was late in the night and just hear Ringo crack a joke or something, you know, and to hear that, it was really kind of opening you up to the experience of what it is to be in a studio and what it is to create.
I'm a huge fan of origin stories. I think this Beatles story and others that I heard about Simon and Garfunkel are critical to understanding the context of Chad, his work with Mike, Pony Creek Studios. We're about to hear why Chad does what he does.
When I am recording an artist, I really like to bring them in, and I know that this is going to be, you know, with any artist, you know, it's like even a painter, you know, when they're looking at that blank canvas, this is the most vulnerable time for that individual. And it can be really disheartening, you know, and I've had that experience where I've gone into a studio and the person producing, the sound engineer producing me, could care less, you know, and that can really pull me back from the experience and pull me away to the point that I don't give it my all, you know, put all into it.
You see, Chad and Michael were part of a band called The Tinderbox before they started Pony Creek Studios. They're musicians and producer promoters, and they understand what it's like to be the guys in the booth.
So anytime I'm producing an artist, particularly I love vocal days. Vocal days are fun to me because that is when, you know, you're hearing yourself on the mic, you're hearing yourself in the headphones, you're hearing all the little nuances of your voice that you may not hear when you're actually performing on stage. And the artist can get super hypercritical of that. But what I find is that if you can take that artist and just kind of work with them and work them through. That's where I find like my psychology degree is huge.
Oh, by the way, Chad studied psychology and was going to be a professor of history before finding his love for the music.
I could be really hypercritical of them, but they're already doing that good enough on their own. You know, they're already beating themselves up for that take. You know, prior to me even saying, oh, how'd you feel about that take? You know, they're beating themselves up. So I find ways, you know, to listen to their voices and to listen to them talk. And I really want to make them comfortable because what I want to get out of them is that right take as opposed to them being perfect. You know, the perfect take is, if somebody says I need to nail that perfect, that is frustrating to me. Completely frustrating to me to hear that because that is not the right take. The right take is it has a feel, you know, it's just
right.
The combination of everything coming together is the right take. Not necessarily if you hit the note with perfection or you strummed the chord perfectly. Maybe you messed up, but maybe it needed to mess up, you know.
So just so I'm upfront, this right take, perfect take idea is my big aha in this episode, and we're not going to lose that thread. We'll come back to it, I promise. But we need to see the bigger picture of Pony Creek here as well. As long as I've known these guys, Michael has been the front man for Pony Creek. He's the business guy, the chief evangelist, he's the talker. But for 90 minutes, he let Chad take center stage during this conversation. I find that fascinating. We're going to hear a little bit from Michael now.
One thing I've always had a talent at is a very loud mouth and very big mouth. So getting involved with somebody like Chad, it was very easy for me to kind of transition into not only a music lover, but in an essence, just a part-time promoter of my friends and my family as they played music. As I've grown older, I've realized the therapeutic aspects of music as well. Not only listening to it, but playing it and getting lost in this higher level of thinking where you're playing something and your body is going through these motions, that muscle memory, and your mind is completely somewhere else, which has been very, very helpful as I've transitioned through my life. So if I can help artists form their craft and help get their music out there in any way, shape, or form, I really want to do so. So partnering up with Chad and showing him some of the business aspects of things to make this sustainable and self-sufficient as we progress and as we move on was the biggest thing. Now we have to turn that into profit, which is another tough thing to do.
There's such a gentleness in the way that Michael refers to this partnership. And I had to ask the questions about how the creative, how the musician in the duo saw this business injection into his otherwise creative endeavor.
Sometimes I get a little too obsessive about it, which is why I love having Michael being logistical about it, giving me, you know, it's like, okay, well, what is going to yield the most effective cost margins as opposed to I'm going to spend all day in the studio. I'm going to be here for 19 hours. You know, I'm going to track. It's just fun, you know, and it's really fun when him and I get together and, you know, the way I kind of feel like I'm the crazy man throwing ideas out and then he's kind of lassoing them in and kind of being like, well, how can we make this feasible? And that's what I really, really appreciate about the combination of him. I kind of keep forcing him to, I keep dragging him along wherever I go.
You guys like each other.
Yes, yes.
Just a umboko.
From my perspective of things is watching my brother, watching anybody play music, the amount of enjoyment that comes in it. And if I were to ask any musician today if they had a possibility to play music all day long, would they take that opportunity and run with it? I think 9 times out of 10 they would say yes. There's a couple artists that play music for themselves, you know, or a couple artists that paint a picture strictly for themselves. To me, art is about sharing, and I know when you add in the corporate structure, you add in the corporate world to that, there's always been that battle between art and corporations, maybe on the outside reflection, but we also have to understand it's usually these corporations that are funding the arts. It's usually these people that are donating their time or their, most importantly, their money to people. These high executives giving their funds away for their passion for the arts because maybe that's something they can't do. You know, in an essence, do I feel bad of pushing these guys? I don't think I pushed them or twisted any arms to sell their music. But it was a way for me to point out, hey, if we want to do this all the time, and if you want to be a true musician, hone in on your craft, practice different things, try a major scale every once in a while, especially you, Chad. You know, it can really make a world of difference.
Michael not only made Pony Creek more efficient in terms of logistics, but he also introduced the idea of music placement in TV commercials and movies. And Chad sees the positive impact that this has had on his musical talent.
It's kind of crazy to think because it's kind of counterintuitive. And this is something that I try to explain to artists that come in that, you know, playing something that's out of your element will only make you a better musician. It's only going to improve your craft, and it's only going to expand upon your abilities, you know. And that's what I found in these last few years. I went from being only able to strum a few chords on the guitar to now a multi-instrumentalist, being able to play piano, being able to play drums, being able to play, you know, but, you know, stepping up and playing these instruments, you know, and, you know, realizing it's like, oh, you know, it's like you kind of expand upon it and you become a better artist.
So I want to get back to this idea of the right take versus seeking the perfect take. But the place I kept hitting my head against the wall on this concept was how you know it's the right take if it is in fact not the perfect take.
It's a really tough question, I suppose, but that's where the art comes behind. You know, I know theory, I know music theory, I know this, I know how to apply all of this to that, and the right formulas to auto-tune a voice, or to do this, or to do that, you know, to make the perfect take. But what happens is, if you tend to concentrate too much on that, you lose the art of what it is to create music, the dissonance that may exist in, you know, a wrong chord being played and a note falling into there that maybe shouldn't have fallen into there, but it did, and for some reason it just works. As far as being able to tell when you're there and hearing it, I mean, I guess it comes to when you're listening to a song, you know, on the radio, you know. There's some things that just sound good to somebody, you know. And that's half the reason why the artists that I work with on the production side of things, I have to like their music. Not for my sake, but for their sake. I have to like their music. Because if I don't like their music, I won't concentrate on the right take. You know, so any artist that I'm recording, I make sure I like their music first, solely because I want them to get that right take, you know, because otherwise I could just, if it was an artist that I didn't really care about, I could get the perfect take because I could take it, track it, you know, we live in the digital realm where I can auto-tune their voice, I can auto-tune their instruments, I can, if they missed a drum beat, I can fix that drum beat, no problem. But that removes the human element of what it is to be a musician or what it is to be a song. And if you tend to concentrate too much on the perfect side of a take, you lose that human element.
This is something I can honestly say I had never considered, that we are in an age where perfection is possible, but that something incredible is lost when that is our only objective, that somehow in the imperfections, in its basic humanity, is where art and creativity and music becomes beautiful.
I always kind of tell musicians to look at a painting. You know, there may be some lines that, you know, maybe the brush didn't quite draw that line straight, you know, like as straight as they wanted it, or maybe it kind of crimpled off or something like that. But that was fine. That's fine, because the painting as a whole is beautiful, you know. You know, and I like to say that with, you know, maybe your snare part, maybe you didn't hit the snare as hard as you wanted to on that one, but if you step back, you know, I try to make sure that the artist step back and listen to the song as a whole, as to don't dissect your part. Listen to the song as a whole, and there's just that feeling when you know that it's the right. I really don't know how to say exactly what that feeling is, but it's just, I suppose that's part of the human experience and how we absorb music. You know, there's just something calming or exciting. It brings about an emotion. You know, it's an emotional experience that it's beautiful, I guess is the best way to say it. It's extremely beautiful, and it's, whether it be, you know, sorrow or happiness or disgruntledness with the punk bands I do. I love punk. It's that emotional experience that becomes the right take. You know, it's like you did that. That emotion is there. That emotion, you added your element of that painting. You know, you step back and it's a beautiful painting now.
Just one more question for you, Chad.
Is it fair to say that the greatest musical accomplishment you've ever had is providing the track "Local" for the Potluck Society?
Yeah, I do. I will definitely say that. Yes, sitting in the room with you. But no. But this is to expand upon that. That is kind of harking back to us as artists of, you know, the Sioux Falls area. One of our most important, and getting tied in with like Andrew Keitlinger or the White Wall Sessions, you know, us as Pony Creek Studios, us as a company, we really want to help, you know, create a name for Sioux Falls. You know, I've never wanted to leave this area.
Michael and Chad produce albums. They help with the White Wall Sessions. They're musicians themselves. But what they seem to be actually doing is building community. And they realize that the right community is far better than the perfect community. In the second half of this episode, we're going to take the opportunity to meet one of my favorite human beings, another creative that believes that the right story, the right creative work, is far better than seeking to attempt to produce the perfect work. But before we do that, I do want to take a moment to remind you about the Tripod Initiative that NPR and many partners around the country are engaged in through the month of March. Our request is that you simply take the opportunity to find a friend or loved one who isn't currently listening to podcasts like the Potluck Society and to make a recommendation to them of a podcast that might be appropriate for them. If you have a friend that likes the outdoors, maybe it's Outside In, produced by New Hampshire Public Radio. If you have a friend or family member that likes design, maybe it's Design Matters with Debbie Millman or 99% Invisible. Just make a recommendation, encourage them to try it, and then on social media, share it with the hashtag Tripod. That's it. Angela Tewall?
Well, good morning.
How are you?
Good. Is now still no okay time to call?
Now is a perfect time to call.
Any time that Angela Tewalt calls you is an absolute perfect time to call. She is brilliant and bubbly, filled with positivity and purpose. Ladies and gentlemen, please meet Angela Tewalt.
Awesome. How are you? My name is Angela Tewalt. I'm a freelance writer in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I love what I do. Well, I began in journalism, which is a completely separate type of writing that I do than I do now. But it was different in the sense that, you know, I was writing for a community, and there was kind of like an intention at the end that had to do with something other than that subject alone. So I started in journalism, and I loved that aspect of writing for some for her entire community and of telling those stories. And I loved interacting with the community and getting to know them. I really felt like it was personal until I exited out of journalism and really began intimate storytelling.
Now, in full disclosure, Angela left journalism and joined an organization called ODA, an organization that I founded and ran. She's a former coworker and a dear friend.
And that's when I knew that the relationship was far more intimate in storytelling than it is in reporting, for me anyways, just because I'm asking strangers to be so vulnerable with me and just, you know, really allowing them to tell their story and trusting me to kind of relay that story to a broader audience. But most importantly, as it has always been for me, to make the subject really feel good about whatever the story is that they're telling me or their journey that they're on at that time, and just really feel good about the place that they're in their life. And so that transition from journalism to storytelling has been incredibly significant for me because it's helped me to validate how important relationships are to me, both personal and professional, but most importantly, that relationship like with your community and how the act of storytelling is all about listening.
Since we've taken the time to talk about questions in the past, I want to drill down deeper into this idea of listening. Go ahead, Angela.
Listening is all about letting them have their space and asking fewer questions, I believe. You know, I really do. And I don't know if that's right. I've never really even asked like a fellow writer, and I'm sure I'm doing it wrong. I'm sure I am. But it just feels to me like I always go into a space, just let them talk. Let them feel as if they're being heard. Let them feel really good. And then let them keep going. And surely I'm guiding a conversation. I've even had interviews where they're like, so you're going to ask all the questions, right? Because I have no idea what you want me to say. Or they're anxious about it. And then 60 minutes later, I haven't said a word, but we've gotten really to significant places that maybe the both of us haven't expected.
I can say with firsthand experience that Angela's process kind of surprised me. It is genuinely led by curiosity. She doesn't come bearing a lot of notes. She doesn't take a lot of notes. She allows the conversation to develop naturally.
I just feel like allowing myself as the writer, as the employee, as the interviewer, to be vulnerable myself and say, I didn't know that. And I didn't know that about you. And I didn't know that you used to work for this person. Tell me about that. Tell me how you got there. Instead of, oh yeah, I read that. Let's just keep going, you know, because then I'm missing that opportunity.
But I don't think she's trying to say she wings it. Are you, Angela?
It's not like I go in and say, well, we're just going to wing this. Here we go. Because that's going to make them anxious. It's more about a genuine conversation, getting to know someone or getting to know their work as opposed to an assignment. I don't want them to feel like it's an assignment. I don't want to feel like it's an assignment. And that's why I enjoy what I do so much. That's why it's almost as if the writing is an afterthought. Like I have come to realize that I love helping people feel really positive about themselves and the place that they're at in their life. It just so happens that I do that through writing. And it's hard to explain, and it's almost hard for me to kind of accept that. But I know I really love writing, and I know I really love relationships and getting to know people. So I've kind of found a way to bring that together. And if that means improvising conversations or just kind of letting those conversations be off the cuff and unexpected, then that's fantastic, right? That's how we get to know people. That's how we allow people in and make them feel comfortable.
Now that you have just a little sense of Angela, I want her to share her thoughts on perfection. What is perfect?
What is perfect? What is perfection? Because people perceive writing in so many different ways. I always feel safe thinking of the subject, and they are my audience. The subject and their loved ones are my audience. Anyone else is just bonus, because that you can't please everyone. And it's so crazy how someone can perceive a small piece of writing so differently than their neighbor. And so you can't really torture yourself with what that perfection is, because there is no such thing as perfection. There's just a really good story. Writers will always, always have a story to tell, no matter what. Like, that is really comforting to me. And it's really exciting to me, because we can trust that people are going to open up and continue to tell their stories. And that hopefully, if we tell it, you know, in a way that, you know, makes us feel good about the work that we do, that we're going to be telling stories that move people and that make a difference. And perfection doesn't matter in any of that, right? It just doesn't matter. And nobody's life is perfect. And if we're telling people's stories about their lives and their work and their families and so on, that's not about perfection. That's just about real, raw life and love. And like, that's what matters to me. And that's why writing is so exciting, because it's just this constant work, right?
Okay, she's just getting warmed up. Listen to this next part.
I read once that you have to trust, whenever you sit down to write a piece, that story would look different if you were to sit down tomorrow or yesterday or even an hour or two later and in a different environment, right? That whenever you begin to write a piece, it's going to look different as if you were to do it at any other time. And you have to accept that. And that was so huge for me to realize, because I did worry about that. I felt like I have to be in the right environment. I have to have a quiet. It has to be morning. I have to be caffeinated. All this stuff that made me feel like, now I can write a good story, right? And now I don't believe any of that. Like, you have to trust that whenever my transcription is done, whenever I feel good about the piece and it's time to get to work, just get to work and know that whatever you put down is going to be the story that needs to be told at that time. And because I feel that way, I also am not big on refinement. I am not big on closing the laptop and going the next morning and changing it completely. It's important that I reread a piece, obviously, a couple different times over, but it is very rare that I will change something completely after it has been let out, so to speak.
But I thought writers were supposed to agonize over their writing and revise repeatedly for generations.
And there are so many fantastic, incredible writers out there who will refine for months if they can. Think about novelists and those writing books. I mean, they're changing stories completely. And that just scares me, and I don't know why. Because then I just feel like, well, if I can change it once, I can change it a dozen and a hundred of times, because writing is so subjective. It can be told in so many different ways. Like, that can, isn't that overwhelming? It's so overwhelming to me. And so that's why it's like, trust that whatever your heart is wanting to say in that moment and during that experience of writing a story for someone is right. And if it makes you feel good too. I mean, obviously I know a piece is done if I feel complete and I feel like I'm doing the subject justice. I'm thinking about that subject throughout the whole thing, whether that's right or not. I'm thinking, will this person feel good? And will this person feel like, thank you? You know, thank you for telling my story and really feeling like they did the right thing, whether they reached out to me and asked the story to be told, or whether they did the right thing and being honest with a complete stranger. I want them to feel like, I'm so glad I opened up to that person and now look what I have, right? And so I'm thinking about all those things as I'm reading through a final draft. And then, you know, that's it. Hand it in before you change your mind. That's what I always tell myself.
But then you need to second guess it, right? It's out there in the world, so you spend all your time thinking about how you might improve it, Angela, and you read the comments and you second guess, right?
I'll be honest with you, very rarely do I read a piece over. However, there are some, if I find myself thinking about that person or missing that person, which happens a lot because I do like to develop really close relationships with these subjects. And it's like, well, shucks, I want to hang out with them now, you know, and get to know more. And so there's definitely follow up there because I'm asking questions that it's like, well, you're going to have to tell me how that panned out, you know, or we were talking about a new job promotion or, you know, growing family, what have you. And so we're talking about big things. And so I do find myself reaching out to that person just to kind of follow up on how's your life. I spend the majority of my time just thinking about that reader and hoping that that little piece on, you know, a little Wednesday did something for them, whether it made them feel good that day or it helped them to build new relationships. I have no idea, but I'm just trusting that it did something positive for them. And, you know, that is my piece. That is my piece with the work, because every single thing I write, no matter how small it is or no matter how significant it is, it does mean something to me, so long as I trust that it means something to them.
I'm going to make a sincere confession and say that I struggle with perfection. I struggle with perfection more than just about anything else. When I first listened to the very first episode of this podcast, I seriously considered quitting. I definitely thought it was one of the worst professional decisions I had ever made because it wasn't perfect. It wasn't even that good. And I can't stop thinking about how I might have let down James Jennings or Zach DeBoer or any of the people that I've had the good fortune of interviewing. But for this podcast and then this podcast alone, I'm going to trust that Angela and Michael and Chad have been well served by the stories that I've shared, by their stories that I've shared, and that maybe just this once, perfect isn't perfect, but just right will be enough. Thank you to the three of you and to everyone that listens. You're the people that I think about when I produce this podcast. Our action antidote for the week comes from a game that Emerson and I invented a couple Saturdays ago. It's a game called In a Minute. Now, it takes its name from something I say way too frequently, in a minute, Emerson. But it's a drawing game with three parts. For each of three rounds, you have a minute to draw something. In the first, a category, say a house or a place you might visit. In the second, a very specific drawing, like an orange playing the banjo in the backyard of a snail who doesn't want him to be there anymore. And in the third, you pick a wild card of sorts. It could be anything, really, that's agreed upon between the two people and is drawn in that round. So today we have a wild card round for you. I want you to set an alarm on your phone or some other device for 1 minute, and I want you to draw a potluck society meeting. Now, this can be as detailed or as abstract as you choose for it to be. Simply take a photo of it when it's done and post it with the hashtag PS006 on any social media platform. That's it. You did it. In a minute. A special thank you this week to Carl Koizer for his continued help and support on the audio. He takes a raw edited program and shines it up into something beautiful. Thanks to our partners at South Dakota Public Broadcasting for all they do and contribute to this region. Thanks to our friends at Pony Creek Studios for our theme song. And thank you to my family. This week, all three of the people I love most have their birthdays. Finn, happy birthday. Amy, happy birthday. Emerson, happy birthday. It's been great having you here with us again at the Potluck Society. I hope we'll see you soon. And as always, don't forget to bring an idea to pass.